Yeah, and she just steps out until she'll be coming there.
Please, can you help me bring this thing close to her?
Which one?
To the teacher.
Now, we have a very long program forward. And I'm not sure if there are any apologies, members.
Honorable Kasim.
Okay, Honorable Kasim. Yeah. Kasim, yeah. Honorable Young Blood. Yes, Honorable Summer.
I'm not so sure whether your office has received the one for Honorable Minister Khalebe.
Oh, yes, I did receive the one for Honorable Minister.
And also, Honorable, your favorite one.
Okay. He has disappeared again.
Yes,
yes. Okay.
Yes. And the rest, I will double check because I don't want to take something.
Okay, no problem.
Honorable Mthambi as well.
Yes, Honorable Mthambi, yes.
And DM Manana, I think he's got the Chinese with his watch, so he's on his way.
Oh, he with his watch?
I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, watches do break from time to time. Okay, yeah, okay. Thank you very much. DM, we've just received your apology that you are going to be late because your watch is not working. Is that true? Your watch. Yeah. Okay. Okay, guys, thank you very much. We're just going to change the program slightly. We are going to start with with the presentation from DPME. We're going to start with the NYDA. In other words, where you have in item number four becomes item number six, and number six becomes number four. Okay. Members, you will recall that a month ago we had a workshop on the policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement. That report is now tabled before you, it's ready, and I would really appeal to members to read that report and input on it, because at the next meeting we shall discuss it in detail. Without further ado, members, can I request the PME to make their presentation? Thank you. Oh, maybe before we move on, I don't know if DM, you would like to say something?
No.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Sure.
Thank you. The We're doing this in the context of a plan, a national plan, national development plan, which all of us in government and society have a responsibility to implement. We are not going to make headway to the country in realizing the vision of our constitution if we do not implement the national development plan. And so our departure point is that we have, and it's really about implementing this plan and improving continuously as we go through. We are finding here a set of activity, the dimensions of our work. Starting off with planning, because everything we do has to follow on the plan. So the plan leads, planning leads in the world of government. This is something that we've always appreciated, because we tend to focus on the implementation. Now we recognize that we have to pay attention to planning, the quality of planning, philosophy of planning, and we have the responsibility to evaluate departmental plans of national government departments as well as provinces. We're starting to also interface with the provincial, sort of the municipal sphere. We do assessment of management in municipalities, but this also helps to incorporate in time integrated development plans of municipalities. We also dimension the capacity, institutional capacity, how we plan our planning practices, trying to emphasize the use of evidence-based planning, and in that context our relationship with Statistics of Africa is critical. The next big area is with regard to the budget, the allocation of resources, ensuring that the national budget supports the priorities of government. So we have been, since last year, have been asked to work with National Treasury in identifying the priorities. Because so far, the National Treasury was both the planner and the budget authority. Now, increasingly, the DPME is requested to help with identifying priorities that should inform the allocation of resources. The last bit has been to unblocking service delivery challenges. And in that regard, tools, methodologies like Operation Pakisa were in critical areas of our policies, critical areas of our delivery, sometimes can be blockages. And we found that introducing methodologies like Operation Pakisa, where we bring all of the players to interact and compact on key deliverables is a very important new area of our work. So we have, over the last year or so, been engaged in the strategic review of our work and reposition. This department, the fairly unique department, the measure of the previous performance monitoring and planning since 2014. So we really, only 2.5 years in the life of this department. So strategic framework where we have identified a number of dimensions strategic objectives, departmental outcomes, all of this in accordance with the requirements of the climate performance plan of the outcomes. The outcomes that we're looking at achieving are indicators here in those bullet points, alignment with NDP priorities, monitoring of implementation, ensuring that youth development is mainstreamed across all of what we do in government. And then finally, ensuring that we involve other actors in society in the implementation of the development plan. It's an area that we're not really as strong as we should be. Doing surveys with various actors, mainly in the research community, to some extent civil society. But I think we need to extend this to other sectors out there, particularly the private sector, that needs to be mobilized systematically behind the national development plan. Arriving out of that, we've changed our organogram. You'll have a sense of that later in the presentation. And we also were successful in securing additional resources for national treasury. We've increased the number of our programs from 5 to 7, and the establishment of the department has increased from 310 to 447. So we are growing as a department. This is critical because our capacity has not really been where it should be. So over time, the next slide, before I hand over to Helen to take us through our strategic objectives, indicates our service delivery model, where on the right side of this slide, starting with the rock in green, we emphasize the importance of evidence and our sources of evidence. Largely, the area where we rely on set A, but we do undertake research, we undertake evaluation, various government programs, draw lessons, which inform the policies that we develop through the FTSM, where we set out interventions, actions, measures to achieve particular objectives. We, as I indicated, we evaluate departmental plans, we look at the budget, and we also commit
first one here is talks through the issue of planning. Where for planning, we are saying our focus will be on ensuring that we promote coherent policy making that will inform planning and implementation of government programs. We'll also facilitate the development of medium and long-term plans in all spheres of government, as DGS earlier indicated. Our focus has been building on national and provincial governments. Now we are moving into the space of local government because we think that is where ordinary citizens should feel the impact of government programs by ensuring that basic infrastructure is in place, proper plans are in place to ensure that those are delivered. We also, in this area, want to develop a high-level planning framework to guide that detailed plan that we speak about. We also want to engage different sectors of society in ensuring that the plans that we develop are indeed driven by the needs of society. The second strategic objective really deals with the development and support for implementation and monitoring of sector plans and intervention strategies. In this area, we want to coordinate and manage the monitoring and reporting of progress on the implementation of government priorities that are in the main aimed as achieving NDC priorities. We also want to maintain a system of monitoring of performance of ministers on behalf of the president. We also advise, support, and ensure that cabinet is informed about progress that government is making in the implementation of the government program. So cabinet is indeed our leverage through which we influence how the implementation is taking place and how monitoring is managed throughout the system. The third objective is to support the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework by monitoring and improving the capacity of state institutions to develop and implement plans and provide services. Here, our intention is to review and monitor support the implementation of the medium-term strategic relating to the development of the capacity of the state. It is based on the assumption that if you've got a state that has capabilities to deliver on programs, we should be able to meet societal expectations and therefore the interest. We also want to facilitate service delivery improvements through frontline citizen-based monitoring programs. These are programs that really focuses on assessing the experience that citizens have in receiving public services. And we do this through what is called Department will take the lead in that regard by ensuring that all government departments and entities are aligned also acquiring the function and monitoring. So, as you would have seen in the service delivery model, this is an integrated new chain that we need to ensure that as we plan, we also make sure that monitoring of those plans is actually in place. So, that's the reason why we have third one is public sector monitoring capacity building. In there we are focusing more because we have been called upon to say what is it that we're doing about what's happening in other state institutions such as the development finance institutions, what is the impact of their investments in transformation of society. So we are moving into that space to try and ensure that we monitor that area to see whether their investments are in line with the National Development Plan, whether we are getting value for money out of what they are doing, and it's an area that was previously neglected. So hopefully we'll strengthen monitoring in that area so that we realize the impact that we intend to make. The fourth branch deals with frontline and systemic monitoring. So basically, this is the branch that currently exists. What we are going to focus on there is to strengthen
Okay, thank you, members. There you are. Honorable Lusoma, Honorable Mata, Honorable Verma, and Honorable Van der Vaart. Young Flo? Yep, in that order, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. But having said that, probably secondly, Chair, let me start by also appreciating the presence of the board here. Because we're dealing with the budget here. And it's very important that the principal spenders of this money, they are here in engaging them. Because also, probably just to recap from yesterday, we agreed that if we don't understand what they have given us in terms of their predetermined objectives and also issues that we have raised in the previous interactions, why not go to approve the budget for a change? And why for a change is because even the atmosphere outside the world has changed drastically. So there is something that we need to do. So I must just express my appreciation for both of them and notwithstanding the apologies, of course. Then the issues change. Chair, I just want to say from the DG, in his presentation, all what you have said, because we are not anymore necessarily planning, but we are monitoring evaluation, but there's another leg that we don't pronounce it. What happens after you have done that? Then my question would be, Chair, but also that one, it also from your assessment and evaluation and the other one, which I'll call it, assist with solutions where they are weaknesses, if I may use that mild word. You can't say the department hasn't performed or has performed if you don't, from where I'm sitting, I might be wrong, Honorable Chair, assess a deliberate, systematized assessment of DGs and the EAs. Because I start from the EAs, which I know they won't necessarily deal with that one because that's the president's call. But the DGs, that's where I would like to zoom in. That, how frequent are the DGs if they are assessed in a way? Because that one, Chair, it will talk to some of the issues that we raised yesterday to say, some departments, you hear that they pay performance bonuses, but then you look at their performance, you just wonder what tool has been used. Probably the other than will assist us to know that, because also those are one of the things from where I'm sitting, my understanding also of your department supposed to be dealing with that, or facilitating that. Some question of that, in terms of your core mandate. Do you, Chair, do they have the capacity, the power, the resources to execute their core expected mandate as expecting the NCP and also even in some of our policy documents that we talk about, in particular around the program 9 and 10 and 11? Because for me, I think there is something that the DPME is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. And we are likely 12 months before the election, because next year they will be all campaigning and excited. The other role that you said you should be playing also to assist the NYDA in particular in executing its mandate in economically empowering, self-sustainable empowering young people to be economically capable. It seems like the way you understand your mandate, you are not spreading it in the way that we expect you to assist the NYDA. Because as the CFO has said that the better part of their budget goes to NYDA, it's not your money, that's NYDA, so you don't even account for it. Even the AG, when he answers you in terms of your preference, doesn't look at that. So I think probably we might have one with that saying, this is transfers, not the larger money of our money, not your money. Just we are the part, the way that the program is actually changed. For me, I'm saying they are supposed to facilitate other departments. Probably to say, it's IDC, whatever that time voting IDC, that has got some 2 billion or something like that. For that's the role of DPSPD to assist and work with the NYPA to those offices, even the other departments also. To say, if we're saying that we want to invest in a young citizen economy in terms of young people, because they are more in terms of their numbers, in terms of the population, the DPSPD should be playing that role. And I don't think finding an expression in their plan, other than that, we support, but there must be something that talks to in your perspective. You don't need police to do that. I know they'll say that there's no police. Some of the things do not necessarily need to do that. You do that then, if there's any need for the police, then you do that. But it's one of the other responsibilities. Hence the man of NYPA comes via you. The other one, Chair, as the role of DPSA, I'm not too sure. I would like just to hear that from the DG. That's the department. I know that the SSA does make presentations to various portfolio committees, but in their own assessment, do they take into account the information and the product and the steps that they receive from SSA in terms of prioritizing or reprioritizing their program, so to speak, in terms of areas of focus? I don't want to make an example, because the other example is one of the young people. Even the issues of learning and skills and so forth, that it also say talk about that. But even the issues of housing as well. It seems like departments are using it optional there, the information from staff in terms of their programs and prioritizing. And I believe that's the role of the DPSE. If you think that you don't know how to do that, ask us then, again. We will follow the due processes to ensure that we are able to reassert yourself as a student, because otherwise you'll be rendered useless. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you, not thank you.
Oh, no, but I heard you correctly.
No, I said it's the English chair. I apologize. Chair, I just want to say, in terms of also, because that's the role also of DPSE, in terms of their evaluation and assessment, the performance of government. I think, Chair, probably we are better placed because we are from that finance committee. You understand treasurer better than some of us, because we didn't spend better half in finance serving committee of parliament, even not even one day. But to say this regulation change, the way the department, the treasurer's department, I must raise those ones, because they must pick it up. To say they just cut the budget of departments without, I hope it's not true though, certainly I'm going to. Without communicating with the department, and we end up you have then to rejump in terms of your plan to ensure that you still without compromising your core mandate, which then ends up the larger part of the money for salaries and wages, or HR matters, let me call it that way, not salaries and wages. So I'm saying probably, Chair, there is something that we need to talk to that. The other one that I would like to know, in terms of sustainability and continuity within the one term of administration, what is the turnover of DGs or senior management? Has the impact on government delivery on its mandate and what it has promised to do within the 5-year administration, which is a more or less a midterm review? That does it have an impact? If it doesn't have, what needs to be done? Or we should think about that one, because also we must have a solution. The very last question. Treasury gave you money, almost double of your budget, which we really appreciated, for whatever reason that he has used, and rationale to give you more money for more stuff, because you are a new department. How much of that budget, based on filling vacancies in a new organogram, and how much that is going to be viewed from where it's unlimited that you don't need it because you didn't spend it. What are the issues that make you not fill up those vacancies?
Thank you. Okay, sure. Over to you, Honorable Muta.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have a number of issues to raise, but I'll confine myself to two and supplement everyone. Let's start at the beginning. The key strategic objectives, that will be on your slide number five, the very first one, where you talk of promoting coherent policy making, planning and implementation. I want to home in on the coherent planning. The issue that I have is to ask you to unpack for us what exactly goes into this when you are urging the department to engage in coherent planning, because as we had yesterday and previously, there seems to still be this silo syndrome going around and inflicting the thing. Subsequently, you spoke of planning that is seamless across the various sectors. It's sort of linked with that thing. And then, of course, you talk about planning alignment. So that seems to be very, very important to you. And I want to know exactly what you do to make sure that the departments engage in this kind of thing, because it doesn't seem to come across in most instances that there is this coherence. And I would like you to link this with slide 20, where you are talking of money. And just to point out the third bar there, where you talk about sector planning. Now, it seems like there's a lot of money that goes to paying the people in that sector, and very little that's getting done there. People get those, the blue and the red. And contrast that with frontline monitoring. I can understand that far. Frontline monitoring means you need people, and of course you've got to do certain things, and I think it's reflected there. So you can just elaborate on that sector planning thing in terms of the planning that you want, the coherence that you want to do. And then, most important, on slide number six, number three, maintain a system of monitoring performance of departments and ministers on behalf of the president. Now we know, and it's always announced with fanfare, great fanfare, that the president is going to sign agreements, performance agreements with ministers. And then we, the servants of the people, in terms of the privilege that we have of asking parliamentary questions, we ask the minister. Minister, since this ministers have signed these agreements with the president, can you please tell the people of this country how they are doing? And the minister comes back to me and he says, no, this is a matter between the president and the minister. So we don't know. We never ever get to know what is the outcome of these agreements, whether these ministers actually adhere to the agreements with the president or not. And if you think I'm joking, look at what happened recently during the reshuffle of the cabinet. I don't think there's anyone in here who can tell me that performance was taken into account when these assessments were done. So my question is, what role does this department have? If you're engaged in this exercise, do you ever get to know, does the president ever talk with you and the ministers concerned about their performance, which you are in the beginning involved in? Thank you very much.
Okay, Honorable Bum.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would like to know, in relation to the age of staff that you have, what is the gender ratio and also the disability ratio? We see the DG said that the department is not as strong as it should be. And I would like to ask, from your experience thus far, you say it's now about 2.5 years, what can be done to strengthen this department more? Because it has a big role to play and a big mandate. So what can be done in your experience, what you've seen from the past 2.5 years, to strengthen it?
Okay, thank you. Yes, maybe let's go to Honorable Jean-Claude. You will come last, Honorable Pandevat.
Thank you, Chair. I have questions about the presidential outline, which has been largely covered by Honorable Rama. Maybe there's just one other issue in connection with the outline that I want to ask you, and that is apart from the success rate, and the effectivity of the hotline, are you able to tell me what was pending total on the hotline in the last financial year? And maybe you can also tell us how many people are employed working the presidential hotline. Then on page 16, the budget and the saving due to delaying implementing the new organizational structure. I would like to know what the present staff complement is and what is going to be the position in the new organizational structure. Is it going to be more people, less people? And when is it being implemented? And lastly, you most of the budget. Most of your budget goes to the NYEA, but there's also a section here which refers to youth programs excluding the NYEA. Now I would like to know, how does your youth program differ from the work that the NYEA is supposed to be doing? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Let me up front say, of course, that we support the NDP, that there's no question. However, Chair, you know, I don't know how this department specifically, it seems to me like a monitoring, evaluating. I think we should monitor and evaluate you, because I don't find concrete evidence on the value for money that you spoke about teaching. Because you are only seeing about the Ignati. It's a lot of talk, a lot of words. To me, as a stupid old woman, so that you can understand what I'm thinking, it says nothing. Lots of work on my face. Words. And Jenny, I'm saying this with all due respect to the department and the ministers heading this department. You can plan for life. You can monitor. You can evaluate. How are you bringing the changes? Not these, we're going to plan, we're going to evaluate. What are you doing on the ground? And start by frontline staff for the people in this country. What have you changed since you started?
Thank you. Maybe before they come in, you come in and respond. You know, I just want to, probably some of the things I want to say, I think Honorable Soma and Honorable Vandervat are covering them somewhat. But there's something that is frightening, actually. It's frightening. In terms of the NDP, by 2030, we should have created 11 million jobs. But there's not a single mention of the biggest disruptor in this document, and that is the digital revolution before us. It's disrupting everything, let alone the fact that we are currently going through a very, very, very serious low growth, economic growth trap. And it doesn't look like we are going to be emerging, we are going to be getting out, you know, out of this trap anytime soon. I don't seem to be getting that. And what bothers me is that this is the department that is supposed to be at the center, that is supposed to be leading the implementation of the NDP. We are 7 years down the line. Where are we? We are still talking about planning, good Lord. We are still talking about planning, but 2030 is in 12 years' time from now. Where is sense in that? It doesn't make sense to me. And I think I concur with you, Honorable Vandervat, that do we really, are we getting the value for money for this department? Is it really cut out to do what it is supposed to do? Is it playing that coordination role that it's supposed to play? Does it have teeth? Maybe we are talking to people that don't have any teeth. Probably you guys, you are just established there. You maybe tell us if you are powerless. Tell us what is actually making you so powerless. And there are three key players to me right now that if I had my way, I would bring inside the room. Because I don't think South Africa is actually feeling the shock that I am feeling from this digital age. This digital culture shock. I don't think people are feeling it. I don't know. Maybe I'm going crazy. I don't know. You have a lot. The way it is, it's disruption. You just have to think about even yesterday I was telling them about Kodak. 2012, it had to close shop. And all of you here, most of you had all your cameras, your Kodak cameras. And now you spend a premium on them. And then today, they are as obsolete as your typewriter. You know, and I don't get that sense. So there are three key players that I think if we are serious about taking this country forward, they should be on the spot here. It is your department. And funny enough, and this is very sad, it is the Center for Public Service Innovation. But guess what is their budget allocation? 34 million. And that is That is inclusive of the administrative costs, the operational costs. The money that is left for innovation is probably less than 5 million rand. And I would bring it our central data bank, Stats SA. So that we can see these things, we can, by now I should be getting a sense that by now, theoretically we should have achieved at least 25% of our goals of the NDP. Have we? If we look at the quality of our education, can we say that it is 25% more improved than it was when we adopted this plan? Have we created at least 2.5 million jobs during this time? Or have we lost jobs? How are we going to do that? What is the character of these disruptions? I don't get the sense that we even understand the character of it. And my main concern, and Honorable Sommer actually touched on this thing, is that one of the things that we don't seem to be appreciating, this thing is going to be hitting hard on SARS. If we are not careful, it's going to be hitting hard on SARS. In 35 years, our main source of revenue was the corporate income tax. Now it's the other way around, it's the personal income tax. And now you have these new platforms, you are talking about artificial intelligence, liquid workforce, platform economy, you know, your digital ethics. I don't even think we've started even comprehending the digital ethics. We haven't even started, we haven't even gone there, and this department is supposed to be leading that. And the reason why I'm saying this thing is going to catch us, and it's going to probably, the devastation that is going to create is going to be enormous, because the departments that are supposed to be leading that innovative space, that space of actually ensuring that the government is on track and so forth, it is as helpless as we heard it today. It doesn't have the power, it looks very powerless, and maybe you have to tell us, why are you so powerless? And what are these things that are preventing you from doing what you are supposed to do? And again, I see something that is really scaring me. If you take the National Treasury Regulation and you take them against what we are supposed to be achieving, the National Treasury Regulations, most of them, are not necessarily speaking the same language, I would argue strongly. I don't think they're speaking the same language as us. In fact, again, the whole thing of the review of budget allocations is supposed to be done by this DPME. But currently, it is a desktop study by National Treasury. National Treasury, is not there to necessarily, you know, be... We can't expect National Treasury to understand the different priorities that we need to have as the government. They are in this fiscal space, they are informing the monetary policy space, they are informing the economic policies and so forth, but we are supposed to be doing this work, and I think we are letting National Treasury do too much, because yesterday we heard what has happened. We are saying in terms of the NDP, we want to fight corruption. But yesterday, we were getting the report from the Public Service Commission. 97% of their budget is going on operating costs. There's only 3% left for them to implement in the public service. And yet we are talking about, you know, building the state of the state, the capacity of the state. By 2030, we should be having a capable state that is serving its people. How is it going to do that when we are having these moral challenges? When we are in this moral crisis, we are talking about a united nation. Are we united as South Africa? I don't think so. And this is the department that we are talking about. And basically, I'm just adding on what Honorable Lusoma was saying, because I think most of the questions that I really want to ask are the questions that were asked by Honorable Lusoma. But maybe over and above that, all I want you to know is that, do you have what it takes to do this? Where are the, what is it that is crippling you? And I think I need to highlight this thing, because I think I have to elaborate what I meant earlier on. When I was saying, you know, we are going to be having a very big problem with the personal income tax. In other words, the revenues of the state, if we are not careful, are going to shrink. They are not going to grow. Because our main source of revenue now is they are coming from the personal income tax. And currently what is going now, you are having, I mean, chartered accountants, yesterday even Honorable Dex was even telling us that some people are now sending, for them to audit their books, they are no longer sending it to the firms here in South Africa. They simply send them on this digital platform to India at a fraction of the price. And those are the people, by the way, that are supposed to be contributing, you know, your personal income contributors. And you are also talking about, you are talking about your Uber, by the way, those drivers now that you have are not like employed in a formal sector. They are employed by a platform. they are employed by a software. You can't say, oh no, I'm going to Uber and I'm going to text Uber. Where is Uber? Because the people that are this thing is happening there. I mean, we are now, all of us here, by the way, and I need to say that today we are saying we are drivers and what have you. Tomorrow that skill is going to be, in fact, as we speak, we are expecting that your domestic worker, your plumber, your electrician, they have to be highly mobile, because they are going to be operated by an algorithm soon. For you to get somebody to come and fix something in your house, you are no longer going to go to the corner there and wait for and pick up somebody who is looking for a job there. You are simply going to be pressing your phone to get that person to your house, and you will know where this person is. Because that's the nature of the economy. The economy now is operated on this e-platform. But I don't think we are ready. I don't get that sense. I honestly don't get that sense. And it's worrying me. It's honestly worrying me. I wish Minister Hadebe was here, because we would love as a committee to engage with him. This NDP that we are talking about 2030, we are almost halfway through it, but we haven't even achieved the quota of what we promised we would have achieved by 2030. And maybe let me leave it there and maybe answer the questions of the members, but it does frighten me a bit.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and we also thank Honorable Members for their questions. I'm going to start to respond to your remarks, Chair. I think one of the questions that is very important questions, and we'll try to address them as best we can. I think the place to start off, Chair, is what the nature of today's engagement is meant to be. It's about looking forward. We didn't understand this to be a reporting meeting. It's a meeting about what we're going to do going forward. And when we try to indicate in our presentation,
But see, sorry, let me just interject. That's precisely the point. You think you are going forward, we don't see that going forward. That's precisely the point, I think, Fiji. We don't think you are going forward. This annual performance plan is supposed to be telling us a bit about what you have achieved and how you are going forward. But we see you, you know, still, you know, in the same, we are not seeing, well, in terms of spending, probably you are going forward. But in terms of what we expect as the outcome of that going forward of yours, we are not seeing that, PG. That's what we are saying.
I take the point about what the
chair says. Chair, let me just ask Mr. PG in what the chair says. Is that the departments are not performing, but you're assessing them, you're evaluating them?
Yes. I'm going to.
Because I think you get to be tempted to be inward looking. We are not inward looking, you are. Thank you.
Certainly. I think this is the point of emphasis, Chair, because we do monitor. So this department is a, among other things, a monitoring department. My encounter with the word monitoring was when I was in high school. And they used to be monitors. So the monitor would come unannounced to check whether the school was running properly, teachers were teaching when they were supposed to be teaching.
Inspection.
Now I know that thing my thoughts are telling me there anymore now. So, in schools, so the government established this function since 2009. Before that, we had nothing. Treasury was both the allocator of resources, the planner, and the monitor in one. And so we established this function. And the last part of the presentation we made is about the instrument, what sort of instrument to perform this function of monitoring do you need? What is ideal? And look, it could be different, it could be configured differently, but based on the history of this department where we started, the approaches we've taken, it is benchmarked internationally. For a start, I think that the monitoring function of this nature has to be located at the center of the conflict. And this is where this department is at. By its nature, it's not an implementing department. We don't implement any of the programs to bring about change. We monitor those that do that, and we give a view. We give a view around where are they doing well, and where are they not doing well, what is required, and we make recommendations. Needless to say, the area where we have been challenged as we report to cabinet is don't just report problems. You must make recommendations. Now, in relation to the issue that you were talking about, Chair, on the digital revolution and our participation as a country in that digital revolution, there are two key areas that our monitoring has been reporting and that require intervention. So, in a level of basic education, math and science, we monitor performance in that regard. And we monitor it in accordance with the relation be in relation to our peers. So at the January, February cabinet, this is the report that we presented to say basic education performance, the medical science performance, we are not where we should be. In response, the Minister of Basic Education says, okay, yeah, sure. But you're also planning. Help us to plan how to improve the output. I'll just use an example to just make the point as to what the department should be. It should not only just be about reporting performance, but working with government departments to develop appropriate interventions, appropriate policies, appropriate plans. And that's why we emphasize planning chair, because planning is a continuous process. You develop a plan, you implement, you learn from your implementation, your monitoring evaluation, and you enhance the plan. Now, you can't have, we are not going to make it to the digital revolution if the basic platforms, especially the government and science, are not in place. I think that story is well known, it's well accepted. It's about how we actually improve food in Africa. The second key indicator that we monitor is expenditure on R&D, research and development. It's one of the core indicators in the medium-term strategic framework chair. There are certain assumptions we made in our presentation. For example, that we have a medium-term strategic framework, which is the first five-year implementation plan for the NDP, since the NDP was adopted in the country. And in regard to R&D, the target, as you know, is 1.5% of GDP annually, is the international norm on R&D. Those countries that are doing that intensively, doing that like that, are the ones who are leading the digital revolution. So if we want to be part of the digital revolution, we have to improve expenditure on R&D. And that's both public expenditure, public sector expenditure, government expenditure, as well as private sector. Now, Chair, in truth, we're not spending there. We are, in fact, hovering around 0.7% of GDP relative to the target of 1.5%. It's a big gap. And the Minister of Science and Technology advocates this increase in expenditure. When we do budget evaluation, we emphasize that there's an area that needs to be protected from the cuts, because cuts, budget cuts, are everywhere. The role we are now playing, what we now play, is that, okay, to the extent that we'll have to cut budget, you need to indicate which are those areas that must in fact be exempted from cuts, either exempted from cuts or that need additional resources. It's a new role, Chair, that we've just assumed just under a year ago. We are developing approaches about how we get a very, very important responsibility that we've been given as a department. So the instrument for planning, monitoring, and evaluation that we have fashioned as a country is evolving. We have just outlined the structure of the department, that hopefully, as we implement, will give us the value add that you correctly are calling for. So I'm saying that personally, I believe that we are on the right path. We confront challenges clearly. This is a department that was built around a very small group of professionals, that are what used to be called the Presidential Coordinating Advisor Service speakers, because no more than 30 people, and many of them left. we have at least the core of those people who are remaining, who have a very deep experience in government. They are experts in various areas of the NDP, the HLF, and yes, that's where the military. What we are saying in this APP is that we have to enhance that capacity. We have to enhance that capacity in a number of ways, and we have to even provide for areas where we didn't actually have the resources for. Correctly, observations have been made about frontline monitoring, which is also a very new form of monitoring that we're doing, which is giving us an additional kind of color to the performance of government. We show up, you know, unannounced in hospitals, in schools, in police stations. And by the way, this works. We do see the improvements. The other day, randomly, I was just looking, an email came from someone who said, please, may the president come and attend an event where a new revamped school is being launched, which is as a result of a call to the presidential hotline that generated a response that led to additional investment in this school. And there are many other stories like that, Chair. And I want to ask Dr. Nsiki, who is actually overseeing the presentation online, to give some additional information about how the presidential hotline and frontline service delivery is helping us with our monitoring and some of our successes in that regard. I'm saying all of this here not to deny the fact that we could be doing better. We could improve as a department, and we have plans to improve. We know the areas where we should be actually focusing attention in terms of the improvements or how we perform as a department. So I don't think we're a perfect department, but we are, of course. We understand the mandate. We have experience in executing the mandate in a number of critical areas, and we have a sense of where we should be going as a department to better improve what we do. So, let me deal with some of the specifics of the questions raised around teams. By virtue of being in the center of government, by virtue of having a minister in the presidency, as well as our minister, that does give us some authority. But in my view, perhaps we should be looking at what other ways can the authority of this department or ability to call people to order, so to speak, to call departments to order. What would be the basis of that authority over and above the fact that we are in the presidency and are doing this on behalf of the president, on behalf of cabinet, and I think that what helps us is that the medium term strategic framework, the commitments that are made in the medium term strategic framework, are commitments that were signed off by the different departments, and they were signed off by cabinet. So we are asking people to account not on what things that we have defined for them, but on things that they have defined themselves with our support and assistance. I think that kind of established the authority basis of this department. Perhaps let me link that to around the performance of ministers. Now, This is a function of the president, it is a prerogative of the president. What we were indicating there is that when the president undertakes that monitoring and assessment of the war, the president relies on information provided by us. And we do two things in that regard. So we frame the agreement, the formal agreement. We frame the formal agreement based on the deliverables of that department outlined in the near-term strategic framework. And that gets signed by the minister and the president. And when the president reviews the performance, So we identify the deliverables. So we set out the deliverables of that particular minister and of that particular department. That's what we do. We develop the draft, and then it's sent to the office of the president, and it's sent to the minister and his side. When the president conducts an assessment of that minister, we develop a report. So in relation to this deliverable, here is what we know has been done by this department. And we send that as a report, and the president uses that as a report. In fact, in an instance where I participated in such a review, a very robust and rigorous review, we are asked to actually raise the department on a scale of 1 to 10. So the system for that part of the work of government is there. The structures and the systems are there for this. The area which is a big challenge, correctly, is the one relating to the performance of directors general. Now, this is an area that is a shared mandate between ourselves and the Department of Public Service and Administration. The decision has been taken that we should assume this responsibility of coordinating the assessment of directors general. The Department of Public Service and Administration have been developing a policy. That policy is currently in draft form. They presented to cabinet, a number of comments were made, they went away. They have not finalized that work. And I think it is delayed for too long. And with the result that, at least over the last 2 years, perhaps longer, the directors general have not been prepared. And that is a big problem. And however, Chair, I do know that in the absence of this performance assessment framework, the decision has been that no director general is eligible for a role. So for 2-3 years, perhaps longer than that, because at a certain point when cost-cutting measures were undertaken, they decided that the director general will forfeit bonus. It will just qualify for an inflation-linked increase. Not at the level of that DG, but I do know that other staff, other levels in the public service are getting more bonuses. And I think that it is a problem. I think it's a problem if a component of the department that are not getting assessed and therefore not getting bonus, but are not getting bonus. I think that's that we should address. So in summary, I think the work that needs to be done in the performance assessment regime for public service is not where it should be. two elements there, and the problem with the audience was that it is going to be difficult to get in this two elements, therefore a huge backlog, I myself, you know, in the 10 years of all time teaching, I've only been lucky to be a sales twice. And you know, it's sometimes not because I've not submitted my documents, but it's just a report. So the system needed change. But we're not there, and I think this is something that the Department of Public Services Administration should assist us with. Chair, you referred to the challenges around employment creation. I think we're not performing well. The economy is not performing well, and I think this is what our monitoring continually highlighting. And it's not performing well for a number of reasons. Obviously, the external factor, the global environment is a big issue. Domestically, there are things that we need to do, we're not necessarily doing all the things that we need to do. We urgently need to raise the level of confidence for investors in our country, because the key factor in our poor performance in the economy is investment. We're not investing in that issue. And with unemployment, as the Statistics in General will attest, the brunt for unemployment is bought by young people. And it is the central challenge that we face, that the country faces, government. And I think that the NYDA is at the coal phase of the challenge. I'm not going to address comprehensively the issues about what we should be doing in that regard. I just want to concede that it is a big concern. Let me speak about, and clearly, I think when NYDA presents, they will probably say that the resources that are allocated to them are adequate. We are setting up a function within the department that is not going to use or duplicate what NYDA is doing, because as we referred earlier, NYDA will be an implementing agency for policies and programs for youth development. Youth development should not just be the concern of the NYDA. That's the philosophy behind this unit that we have proposed to establish. Youth development should be the concern of all of government, all of state-owned companies, all of development finance institutions. And in a formal sense, to the extent that the DFI is for example, and stable companies is brought to the economic empowerment, inside the economic empowerment is used as a special framework that is designated. Government departments are also supposed to be promoting the economic empowerment, and in fact, youth policy that was developed makes it imperative for each government department to account for what it is, what we're all doing for young people. Coming to the budget, the departure point behind thinking
about... if you don't mind, could you be brief now, because
sure.
The time that we've allocated for you, we've
sure.
kind of exceeded it, and I heard you saying Dr. Nsigi still has to comment. If you could try and be brief.
Yeah. Chair, so what would really make me as the DG of this department happy from a monitoring point of view is if we say young people are nearly half of the population. And we're saying, therefore, put us government, at least as government. If we are able to track our expenditure and to make sure that every rand that we spend as government goes into supporting young people, I think that we will make a huge impact on youth development. At the moment, we can't quite track what every rand of expenditure does for young people. And from a monetary point of view, I think that's ideally where we should be getting to. Now, in that regard, there are a number of initiatives that within the department, what we assess the different areas of our work, but to track what the impact is for young people, and of course the whole of government. The deputy minister convened a forum, a working forum of other deputy ministers of departments that are key to youth development, and we're all trying to achieve that sense about what is within our competence that we can manipulate to advance youth development, and that is the whole idea behind this program.
Okay, and we're still going to have the NYDA presenting. You know, DG, I'm going to be very frank and honest with you. I honestly don't believe that the assumptions that you made when you were drawing up this revised strategic plan, this document, I don't think they're correct. I honestly don't think so. I also don't think that you are up to speed with the reality that we are facing. I honestly don't think so. I think you are in this defensive mode. And unfortunately, the era that we are in is disrupting those norms and standards that you are telling us about. And I'm not so sure if we are going to be able to sing from the same hymn book. I'm not convinced. And I'm not convinced that this department is going to realize what it is supposed to do for as long as we have wrong assumptions from which we revise our own strategies. An annual performance plan is supposed to be giving us an indication, at least, of your own assumptions. We should be convinced by your assumptions. Your assumptions are not convincing. They are not convincing. As far as you are concerned, yes, maybe there could be something better that you could do, but at least you are okay. It's going okay. I don't see anything okay with it. And honestly, I do want to respond in writing to today after we've deliberated with the committee before we could make, so that you can make an informed expression on this document. I honestly think we should do that. I don't think we should be wasting our time on this thing, because right now we are going in circles and circles and circles, and it's not helping us at all, because I was giving you the opportunity to share with us your hindrances. What are the hindrances? What are the things that are probably not making you to achieve what you are supposed to achieve? Right now we are sitting with departments that, I mean, most of the plans that we see are not necessarily factoring the statistician general inputs. They have something different, and they have targets that are not speaking to that. And I think your department should be bringing that to the center. We should be able to say, by this time in 5 years ago, we're sitting at this time at this unemployment rate. Now we are here, and we should be saying, in terms of our own official statistics, we are basing this on our own official statistics. I'm not getting that. All I am seeing here is just the key APP commitments, which are broad statements that are not specific, that are not measurable, that are not time-bound, that I'm not even sure if I were to look at how you've costed them. How did you cost them? Because they don't look as though they are measurable. They just broad statements, and that bothers me. And for your own information, I'm very, very administratively inclined. And therefore, I'm not the type of person, and I know that my members are not as well. We are not here, when we are performing oversight, we are not doing this for compliance sake. We wanted to do this because we want our country to perform better and to achieve our dream of a prosperous South Africa. But for as long as our tone is like this, our dream is going to be deferred further and further away until it fades. And that's my worry. Anyway, I will put it there. I thought you wanted Dr. Nsiki to comment. You may comment, Dr. Nsiki.
If I may, Chair. Chair, I think what you have said, also, what also some of us, and Honorable Dawood, who are part of the state of this committee, is that when the acting DG came in DM, we raised this issue. I remember also sent us a, even told us, in his presence, because we're doing the budget reviews at that time, to say the way the government department are structured and their system doesn't respond positively to achieve the NDP objectives. And I thought this time around, Chair, the DG, with this opportunity, having been working closely, even administratively, with ZSA and other relevant departments, as you alluded to, very different than the conflict. We even raised the issue also of the, you can't have the target that you can't measure because you can't assess them. For me, Chair, I would request that again, same thing that you raised to the Chair. You can't even have a meeting with the minister before the budget approval.
Yeah, I think we
should.
Yeah.
We're going to be different than people who think that we're crazy and we're not crazy.
Yeah. I honestly don't think that Minister Hadebe will also be happy with this document. Yes, Honorable Fondevas? I'm listening.
While the Deputy Minister is also here, also to be honest, I'm looking at the document and I can't fit it in with what's happening in our constituency, but with regard to our oversight visit. I need a kind of presentation where you say what you will do Young children, as young as four, have no food since Friday, and they hospital. and only because of a WhatsApp group I was informed on Sunday. Now I need to know that in my province we have, you know, the schools feeding scheme. Now what is happening is there's school hospitals and there's no food there over a weekend and the principal doesn't even care. How are you as an EPMP monitoring that? I cannot read documents like this and, you know, the policies and the goals are fine, but on the ground, like Honourable Honourable said, you know, on the ground we do not feel it, we don't see the difference. This is going to continue from 2013 and we can't, 2013 and we can't have it. The principal doesn't care that the schools for disabled children are neglected, buildings burned down, children inside who died, and how do you monitor all of those things? We need to know, we need to see the difference on the ground.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Dr. Hansiki?
Thank you. I'm
not you, Deputy Minister.
No.
Go on.
Thank you.
that the DG must be assessed. It must really be talking to the work. Now we said as you can, it must encompass impact results, the performance assessment of the DG. It must encompass results of frontline service delivery monitoring, because we have seen that the DGs and the HOPs do drag their feet in attending issues that have been referred by you know, citizens by default. So this is why we and now bringing it together in the guidelines that we have developed with that policy. We are frustrated that that policy has not been passed and is not being implemented of assessment of DGs, and would like to see that policy being passed so that the assessment of executive authority be a combination of assessment of, you know, managers starting from low levels, coming up to DG level, and then that only then that you can say you are seeing the aspect, the performance of the executive authority. I wanted to just make those.
Okay. No, thank you. DM? Manan?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the first point is that I think we need to look at the actual annual performance plan in relation to the presentation. Because I think the presentation rocks extent within which the annual performance plan has gone to actually illustrate what the plan of the department is. I don't know what the reasons are, but I think that the presentation could have gone extensively in representing what is, or in summing up what is in the plan without compromising the detail. I think that's the first point I want to make. The second point is that I think the portfolio committee should probably afford the department an opportunity to again present the results for the management performance assessment tools, the results for the frontline service monitoring, which I think at some point were presented before the portfolio committee. There is the report of the presidential hotline, the report of the president's program, which is the Atola, as part of the programs that the department are running, which speaks to their functions of monitoring and evaluation. Because I think that would then give, give the portfolio committee an opportunity to get a sense of what really is being done. Because through an annual a presentation of the annual performance plan, it may not be able to help the portfolio committee to understand what is being done in terms of monitoring and evaluation. And I get the sense and the point that the members of the portfolio committee are making. The third point which I wanted to make is in relation to the anchor of the annual performance plan of the department, which is the medium-term strategy framework. The decision, and which is one of the things mentioned in the presentation and in the annual performance plan, is that we are mid-term in the implementation of the medium-term strategy framework. The national development plan was handed to the president through a joint sitting of parliament sometime in 2012. And subsequent to that, the president instructed the Ministry of at the time performance monitoring and evaluation to develop a mechanism to monitor the implementation of the National Development Plan. And a product of that was the medium-term strategy framework. And therein lies the overall assumptions of government's plan for the year 2020. presentation of the annual performance plan to the portfolio committee must be accompanied by the presentation of the medium-term strategy framework by the department, which will give a sense to the portfolio committee that we are appreciating the situation wherein we find ourselves in terms of all the outcomes that are identified in the National Development Plan, and ensuring that the whole of government implements all of those outcomes. I think that, you know, so presenting the annual performance plan on its own without getting the portfolio committee to appreciate the work that has been done through the medium-term strategy framework could actually lead to the committee assuming that it is the result of what the department intends to do. And then the final point which I want to make, Chairperson, is that for the better part of this term, the department has been doing ups and downs, ensuring that we build capacity. Question of the chief that you were talking about essentially is about capacity in terms of human resource. We both myself and the minister, and also I think the department, has come on several occasions to the portfolio committee to explain what we believe would be optimal capacity for the department to be able to do its work. And I think it's one of those things that partially been resolved in order to ensure that the department is able to do that, which I thought I should address those issues and for the media and the department to look into the issues that the portfolio committee chair with your indulgence, and look into the issues that the portfolio committee is raising, both here and also in Brighton, and incorporate those into the annual performance plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, members, I think we are going to, pardon?
DM.
Oh, DM, sorry, DM, Depo.
Chair, allow me to be opportunistic and exploit my presence here and also to make an observation in relation to what the DG has presented to us. The issue of the monitoring instruments that the DG spoke about, I think they are so critical for the success of the department. He says we are developing instruments, if I can properly. Because we assume by the virtue of your mandate as per the Constitution, those instruments could have been the first thing in the department when we were established. And I'm just worried that we take long to can do can do what we're supposed to do. In relation to the macro structure, the branch 4, which is responsible for frontline and citizen-based monitoring, I think the sooner you fast-track the instrument, the better, because when you talk about monitoring, is a process of keeping an eye constantly on something. Now, we cannot confuse the unannounced visit. Well, it's part of that, it's part of monitoring, but we need to have those instruments which will constantly keep an eye on what is happening at the front line to give a point. Because it will help us to systematically in the CPSA, we also do the same as you do, and it will be important for us to meet so that we save resources. You will find our officials are visiting one area as part of the frontline program, who are also doing the same without showing to each other. So I would suggest outside this, when we come into the portfolio in the next appointment, we shall be having as these two departments who are almost doing similar work, where are the overlaps, and then how do we coordinate to avoid duplication? Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. Members, I suggest that we move forward. Let's go to the NYDA. Mr. R. Lamukumba, if you could, guys, if you want some tea, there is tea outside. Just step out and come to us. We're not going to break for tea. Is to compare these two documents.
No, I've done that. Yeah.
This is much better than
and
this, and it doesn't make
but
sense.
But the presenter
to me.
Chair, you must also make
sense. You
must have to understand why do they give us
these documents. Because if you look at the thing,
man,
this is a transfer, by the way. This should be NYDA.
And the expenses.
And the expenses. Very expensive with the minister. The NYPA one is much better.
Yes, I'm not.
No, the pretty one I've got.
What did
you
say? Are you ready? Oh, okay. Just before you come in, Doctor, you know we visited a few NYDA offices during our oversight, and we think this is a very important feedback. We were very, very impressed with the offices we visited. We went to Free State, in Mpumalanga and in Limpopo, in Polokwane. And we managed to engage with even young people there. And really, we actually had a very long discussions with them. We are not talking about the staff per se, but just the people who were coming in there, the beneficiaries of the NYDA. And we think that it augurs well with what we are trying to achieve. We were very, very impressed. And you've actually employed the right people for the right job, because that matters as well. The people that we found that were managing the offices were very, very professional. I mean, in Limpopo, that lady in that...
Also the
no, in Mpumalanga, that lady.
Yes.
who was the manager. And when we went to Polokwane, we found that there was consistency in terms of the level of the quality standards that are there, and in terms of how they are dealing with young people when they are coming in and so forth. And by the way, we didn't feel that it was stage managed because we were coming in, because we can, if you try and stage manage, we can tell. And we didn't find that, and we were very, very happy. I thought we should give you a tap on the shoulder. You've been doing very well, even in terms of how you are exercising your fiscal prudence. And we want to encourage you when you are doing the right stuff. And let's hope that you'll continue doing that.
Chair, before I forget, in the NYA, what Dr. Zick is on the floor, before he hands over to the CEO, is the issue of, if we can also, when you respond later or somewhere,
we are talking about the whole committee, including the other party. No, even by the way, this includes honorable this includes Honorable Van der Vaart and Honorable Madao. And in fact, we're very happy, all of us. By the way, now we don't play games here at the end. When we exercise oversight, we make people shiver. And when we get to a place and we find that there is something good, we are very fair. So we don't victimize people. We just want the right. We came so much about this country. Not when you love something so much. Yeah, we have that love. And it's out of that. It's not out of malice or anything. And that was our experience. And you did, it was during the time when I went to Mpumalanga, when I was chased. When I went to that hospital, I was from the NYDA office. So you can understand. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that we are really happy that the committee finds that picture is consistent with the culture of performance and governance that is placed in the organization. And the members would recall that for the past 2 years now, the organization has been sitting clean on the chair. And it is not just because the books are worth.
Done on the NYCA and we
father, there is a need for a NYC to maximize degree. We therefore said that the NYC needs to separate the core and tribal area so that they do not also, you know, waste resources on areas where they are making minimum effort there. They should give those to the key delivery partner. So we isolated the key focus areas, the independent blocks, and the intentions are indicated for to maximize the impact so that you can see where the efforts of the NYCI must be. Because of that, the NYCI has been identified into the fourth block. So instead of NYCI having a mirage of programs, we have to then say they need to be prioritized in terms of the allocation of resources to areas where they're going to make much money. And then we have to redefine and relax. We talked about the technology. We really have emphasis on that, and the CEO is going to talk to that. And so those were the principles, and the main focus was economic participation as well as skills development, and the key focus areas for the NYC. And all of that can be there. So in the ATP, the members of the portfolio committee will see that the programs like a second chance program that we're doing, but anyway, they were spending zero amount of money doing that. We then recommended that NYCA just support the Department of Education, partner with them, and let the Department of Education really run that program. So that NYCA do, that which they can do there. Support entrepreneurship development, support skills development in other institutions. So the CEO is going to talk to the exact program that he has set for the day for the meeting. And he will start with the key initiatives of course of the turnaround strategy that the NYC has been presenting to the committee and then going to the program. And I wanted to mention see the program they must have in mind that we have really decided that everyone must focus on those programs where they must be delivered and where they must do advocacy. They must do advocacy instead of going to different families and the problem. So the other areas also in health, we decided that they will do health under the key programs of NYC. So it shall not be the same as those programs. I will use the CEO to transfer out to the key programs.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will be quick in my that while we present a plan, we also want to send a message to the portfolio committee or appeal to the portfolio committee for support for your development, not for the agency, but for your development. And that we must go to that commission to make the presentation. I thought that, you know, given the input by the chair, and innovation space for
we've created meetings, we have split the NYC, we have addressed all the challenges of governance and international compliance, but still today, we're not seeing a change in attitudes towards the investment in youth development, specifically in the NYC. And this is the thing that we're saying, having done all this, we think we need the support of this portfolio committee to re-engage with government, to re-engage with the private sector so that they can be better investment in youth development. Also, this within the context of South Africa being a youthful nation. And, you know, research telling us that we'll remain a youthful nation for the foreseeable future. It is important that we invest in youth development and young people in particular. So you will definitely realize that when I present the numbers do not match the demand. And I'm not going to start with these issues because we have gone through them a number of times. So while I was thinking that economic participation, education, and development research has gone through the government. But I would then just define or just say what are the objectives of each or what is to achieve through each of the issues that we're discussing. Our country, which is where my team to say with and of course, I mean, I think at some point we'll probably engage the general persuasion to produce data in line with the definition of young people in South Africa, the 40 to 35 age, because the information is not exactly presented in that format. We'll try to work out the numbers and deduct an estimate of what we believe is the number of young people between the age of 15 and 35, and our number puts us somewhere around 16 million. So if we then take a quarter and say there are 15 million young South Africans within the age bracket that have an expectation of the agency to intervene, and we look at the budget allocation that the agency has been receiving from government for the last 5 years, I will say to you that for the last 5 years, the 4 years prior to this year that we're in 2017, 2018, the 4 years the agency has continuously been taken by the from the national system. That is continuing to happen even post the getting of the support. So what that tells you is that whilst we say we are a full country, to have entrepreneurship and thinking of themselves as employers and thinking of themselves as the future owners of the giant stock exchange and the wealth of this country. We can't be talking about only the 80,000 businesses owned by young people being supported by the NYC. We should be speaking about higher and bigger numbers. If we talk about jobs, direct jobs like this agency can produce potentially, we are talking about only 6,200. In a situation where the literally 2% of the unemployed, the economically active in this country, are those that are defined as young people. That is not enough. It requires us to rethink the type of investment that we're making towards this country. And you know, 5% of those are some small numbers. And you will then see that as we go down, those numbers are continuing to not be very impressive in relation to the population that the organization is trying to attend. So I think I've made the point. I will not go into the detail of question. Number the young people supported by education, this is the scholarship that we are assisting young people specifically from rural areas to pre urban areas to access quality education in the cities where the young people. This is only a figure for the 2017-2018 financial year. The program has started 3 years ago. I think this year will be the last batch of the first intake will be graduating. So the cumulative number will reflect about 1,500 of young people that are traveling to the college. And then about 1.5 million young people will be providing information that can assist them to improve their lives. This will do through the website, the call centers that we have established, but also through the local information that we have established in partnership with the municipality. We have about 120 of those that are functional thanks to services teachers that have given us the grant to run an internship program which allows us to personalize those programs. So young people can go to in this municipal office to give access to information about how they can access opportunities within the broader government as well as the private sector as well. Now, as I've been put on the issue of the fundraising or the fundraising aspect that we are pleasing to this committee to take up on, I would just like to say that over and above what the government allocated to BTA, as the agency director, we continue to try to reduce both the private sector and the public sector to invest in this project. In the year that we have concluded, we have managed to raise 98 million to add to the 490 million that we have been allocated by government in order to drive the impact of youth development. And this year we're looking at 108 million, which were produced that we have mentioned that they would take and run with grant funds as when they conclude the network at the end of June. But the point we're making is we're making some strides. When we're able to raise the 108 million by ourselves, we think that if we have your support, we can be able to do more. And this is the plea that we're making on behalf of young people. Now, I want to focus a little bit on this particular key performance area of national resilience because this is a new responsibility that has been given to us by the executive authority, the president, through the minister. To say that the NYCA must coordinate or must take the role of coordination for the national resilience program for the country. This is intended to be the single biggest skills development and as well as a social coordination program and patriotic program for government. The intention here is that at least 1 million young people must be enrolled in this particular program. If we look at the dropout rate that happens between grade 1 and grade 12, the
cycle on this model enterprise use cases as long as they are DFI or other commercial funding institutions. So, this is a very important program for us. This year, we need to set that we implement an advanced or at least we change that responsibility of coordination. The idea is that all governments must be contributed. So, our role will be to play the secretary role, but also to design the development program, design the curriculum, design standards, and also train and capacitate those who will be implementing it, because we understand that everybody else in the government are not in the business of safety problems. They are in the business of human rights. We are in the business of safety problems. We must assist them to be able to carry out and implement these things. But we also take the responsibility of monitoring and evaluating so that we can begin to take lessons out of the implementation to improve the program so that it assists us to achieve the intended objective. So you will know that if you look at all of those KPIs that we've put there, they are more inward-looking. The reason for this is that we are setting, we have taken 17 as the center of implementation as the aim of setting up the infrastructure to ensure that the program, when we take full speed in the implementation, ourselves as the coordinators are better capacitated, are better prepared to be able to run. We will see what we're talking about, putting in place a system that will be able to be used by everyone who will be participating in the program, communication strategies, the marketing plan, the frameworks, and so on and so forth. These are the administrative stuff. What you will see when we present in the APP for 18, 19, 20, and moving forward, you will not see this anymore. You will be starting to see numbers. This will be saying to you, in terms of national department, We are targeting that the existing national department must implement this one national planning program within their particular space of expertise. In provincial department, this is how many programs we're expecting from a provincial department. This is how many programs we're expecting from local municipalities, because this we want to be some kind of a direction that all of us as a country move towards. Killing our young people, but importantly, teaching them and instilling in them the principle of flexibility and community. So, this is what we would do. Focus on that so that we also get the context of why the KPIs are more important, so that we will address that particular issue. Again, like I said, we will hire into the reason about the 108 million, the number of 10 and 8 and so on. Again, speaks to the financial ability to be able to do more. And like I said, our system, like we think that we have addressed the issues of governance, we have addressed the issue of financial management, we have addressed the issue of compliance, and we have made the case that these agencies can be trusted with the future. But we're also saying that our role to you and to everybody else in the public and private sector is not about the investment into the economic community MIT. It's the investment going to the people. If bank or if private sector company can adopt a program within our private and implement it themselves, I can be a model. We just want to see you
to somebody's left from this presentation.
As a way of investing in a better and prosperous for the country. And then the last KPI is to, again, inward looking is how we position ourselves from
about 189.8 million. It took up more than So we to keep them up to standard with GPAB us about a 5% increase in the budget. That is going towards filling critical vacancies as well as the end of the gap in the standards. We stabilize the compensation budget. If we look overall, our goods and services budget takes up about 65% of our annual allocation, whereas our compensation budget is about 35% of our annual allocation. Thank you.
Thank you. There you are, members, and I'm very mindful of time, and we would like to apologize to the Statistician General. We had to start with DPME. They requested to start, and we didn't consult with you. We are really sorry about that, and that is why we are a bit behind. Yes, Honorable Lesoma?
Chair, I'll do my best.
Please be brief.
One chair.
Okay.
One off with a duty in the middle of one. But quickly, one chair. Yesterday I had an interaction with a young person. You know, this DM, Madame, this young person was saying that DM Madame.
My name is.
And DM. When I DM, when you were here yesterday, you were not here talking. But to say that one was complaining about this thing that we are dealing with now introducing as government as a program, radical economic transformation. That we've got software, Toyota, we don't know who does the repair or for servicing our cars and all those things, but I'm just quickly to say that there is something that DPME and other departments can assist young people to be economically sustainable. This is what the Honorable Chair raised earlier on without repeating some of those points in terms of the ICT digital revolution. To say probably this young person was right, but I didn't agree with him. But I'm just confessing to raise it as an issue that you must look at around the issue of job creation and economic sustainability of young people. The other one, Chair, that I would like to raise is that I'm happy. I must confess to Chair that also the issue of the famous concept of digital evolution is the issue of moving away from buying cameras, the product issue that they have moved from that, and I'm sure you have 100% moved from that. Chair, the other one that I would like to know now is a question moving forward in terms of the relationship to ensure that you do value add in terms of the lives of the young people that are economically active. If you have a relationship with SALGA, COCA, and SOP, why I'm raising that is that in terms of having a relationship with municipalities and also indirectly without giving municipality unfunded money, to say let's have this relationship because it's very important. If you elevate it at that level through that relationship, probably can improve, other than municipalities selectively randomly have agreements with you in terms of establishing offices like you are in every table and so forth. The other one, Chair, in terms of the presentation, which is my last point, is the way you presented it, you are turning around, which means the next day one of the that we're telling because we'll be moving, because now you have affected yourself. Two, moving forward, which I appreciate, but with some little bit of discomfort, is the issue that you have to capacitate yourself moving with time and everything else that is happening globally and internationally within Africa as well. But you are not saying by no means that we are suggesting that you are commanded in terms of what you should be doing to the potential beneficiaries of this way. You are going to be getting that. And also, the budget doesn't then tend to be biased inward because that would be operational cost, which we will have a problem with that.
Okay.
I think we need to stop there. Other than that, I'm fine, Chair, because we are able to measure them. The only thing that not Eastern Cape and Gauteng only, the other province that is called KwaZulu-Natal, which has the only one regional office. Thank you.
Yes, Honorable.
Just a quick one. I was happy to see the reaction earlier on when the chair spoke about our experience up north. Yes, indeed, we supported what we saw there, and it was good. And you guys at the NYDA should actually doff your heads every time you see the DA and say, hey, you guys helped us, because think about it.
Come on. Are you now trying to... Oh, come on, Honorable Motau. That's not fair.
Here's the point I want to make. And the Deputy Minister knows this, because he was in the hot seat. If we hadn't raised our voices, you would still be having kissing contests. Now, the important thing is this. We said this before, and I was on record for saying it, that if the NYDA does the right thing, should be the first ones to wave the flag and stuff like that. We were totally opposed to politicizing this institution, and that seems to be moving. It's for the youth of South Africa, and as long as it's done properly, we'll always be there with you guys.
Okay, at least, Honorable Matau, the latter part is well received. Yes, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm just a little bit puzzled about page 4 and page 4. I hope that you mean the combating crime and substance abuse and not combining. Okay, good. Okay, my real question is on page 12. Page 12, can I ask your 2017-18 annual targets, those numbers, what cost does it equal to? Because it says 800, but now those costs, how much, what is the cost of the agency? Okay, I just wanted to make another comment. In the city of Honorable Tower is not here. This province may be a DA province, but I'm very concerned about our areas where gangs and gangsters and shooting are growing and among youth in this province. And there's no NYDA office in those areas. Now, when I ask the youth, do you know NYDA? And they tell me they've never heard of it. So I am hoping, I only see NYDA where in the Golden Acre building, in Cape Town, it's the only place, but Lavender Hills, Bondi Hill, and those areas where gangsterism is on the increase, I repeat, on the increase amongst the youth, there's nothing for them to do, there's no after-school activity, and there's no NYDA office. So I'm hoping that in those areas, we'll get to know the NYDA. And the same with the Unit East in KwaZulu-Natal. I asked the youth there, do you know NYDA? Contact NYDA, they know nothing about the NYDA. So yes, you are asking for money, and I'm hoping that you're getting more money so that you can branch out more to reach more young people in those areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody wants to speak? Okay, maybe let me come in. It's a very short one. First of all, I wanted to congratulate you, but I think you've only scratched the surface. Unfortunately for me, sometimes I feel I'm in the wrong environment, you know, because I'm more into quality management systems, and quality is not... Quality is, you never get to quality. When you get to it is obsolete. You have to find something else. Now, what I would love to see in your, this is going forward. And this is not necessarily going to be requiring more resources from government. And what prompts me to recommend this to you, to probably consider including it in your aims and objectives, before I can tell you what is it that I want to tell. You are the former ESCOM CEO, right? There is something beautiful that ESCOM is doing. And I feel sad because I don't see NYDA there. I'm a fan of your of the ESCOM International Young Scientist Fair. I am telling you the kinds of innovations that are there are incredible. By the way, in 2015, my son was the only winner in the computer science category because he developed the algorithm for African languages. If you go to a Google platform, you know what it does with African languages. It doesn't understand that thing. And he got exposure through that. Now, I'm saying these are young people. And remember, let's align this with our goal of the NDP, of uniting this nation. And the children that are there are drawn from schools from all over Africa. They go through the different processes. It would be good if you guys, we could see you being there as well. You know what I mean? Being there to promote innovation and entrepreneurship. And also, you know, it would be great for you if you are able to identify these people. By the way, even the face of capitalism, comrade, is changing. It's no longer, I'm talking internationally. Your billionaire now is a boy in a garage somewhere who has innovated some idea. Think about the Google brothers. Think about Steve Jobs. Think about those kind of people. It's no longer about who are you connected to. You may actually find that these people, all they need, they come up with an innovative something. All they need, they just need to be linked up with somebody and maybe you develop. All you have to do is to understand your venture capitalist that might be there, out there, and you link them with those people or something like that. I think we need to do that because in South Africa we have a challenge. Whenever our citizens tend to really always run to the state, And I think it's an anomaly that we don't have something that speaks to innovation and entrepreneurship amongst the youth, because that's a key thing to me. And I'm hoping that your board or whatever, when you are sitting together, do consider that, because that's like offering a platform where the youth, when you they can come into your office with an innovative idea, and maybe if they are young or they belong to a particular school, you might even be referring them to say, why don't you go and participate in the ESCOM International Young Scientist Fair, you know? Because they can be getting that platform, and that platform can take them very, very far. So there are so many things that we can do other than just expecting government to be pumping in money, because the reality is that our revenue base in real terms is shrinking. It is shrinking. And we need to be thinking wisely about how we do things. And I, because you are young people in particular, I'm a mother, you see, and the mother in me is saying, I must recommend this book to you. Exponential Organizations by Salim Ismail. It's going to tell you how fast this world is moving. It's scary, actually. When you read that book, you really get scared. And I know you won't put it down, because it will give you a sense of where you should be placing yourself in this digital revolution that we are in, because it's very fast. Whatever that you come up as a standard, by tomorrow it will be, you know, it will be nothing. There was something that I posted and I got into trouble with it, because I was saying, as government, soon we are going to be left with our laws. You know, we'll just become so useless. And it's scary. So I'm saying, please, guys, that will be my comment to you. And I also think that think more about also when you are approaching the private sector, sometimes the way we approach the private sector is not, remember, when the private sector engages with you, They are looking at the bottom line. I'm a former banker. And the reality is that they just look at the bottom line, and that's it. So they are not going to be sympathetic to you simply because we are saying, we are the youth, we are the future, we are the future market, we are this, we are that. They want you, in other words, when you are getting people that are coming in with innovative solutions, that all they need is just to get a venture capitalist who is willing to take the risk of actually putting this thing out there in the market. They are looking for those things as well. And that's how you unlock those opportunities. That's where you are adding more value to the government. And you are also not, because I think we are overusing, I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think we are overusing this rural development. No, I'm not against it. But the reality is that the concentration of people is in the urban centers. The urban migration is, we've got to understand that. We need to have a product that is tailor-made for rural communities where we go, maybe mobile or whatever. But the reality of the situation is that young people are flocking the cities. That's the bottom line. They are going into the cities. And that's where we have to be focused on. I remember when Nancy Sanger used to say, came up with it. I'm not sure if you still remember. When he proposed something that maybe we should consider shifting from focusing on spaces and focusing on people. And there was a weird idea that came up about the Northern Cape having to be closed down or something because it doesn't have people or something like that, you know, to say maybe that we don't need that province, maybe we can slot these people somewhere in other provinces. And I think these are the things that we need to start thinking about very strongly. Because the challenge with us overemphasizing, you know, rural communities, it's important. I'm not saying it's not important. But we have to remember that. And so that we avoid the problem that you spoke about, about the Riavara story. Where people have, you have a route that is not where people are. It's going somewhere else, you know. It's so far away from people. And I'm saying let's rather focus, let's use Statistics South Africa in our planning extensively so that we can look where is the concentration of people. And we start there because you know that if you are going there, you are going to have a maximum impact almost instantly. Because if you are going to start where maybe there are only 3,000 people in over 1,000 square kilometer of land, there are only 1,000 people, you are not going to be having the major impact. And as a person from the African National Congress, I want to be honest with you, I'm not happy that in 10 years we've lost Five metros, that's where people are. The majority of the people are. That's where money is as well. That's 2 times, by the way. 2 times. We have only 8 metros in South Africa. We've lost 5. 5. We can't afford. And I want Honorable Matau to hear this one. Honorable Matau, please raise your hand and clap your hands and say, yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say to you because I want you to understand how important urban centers are because that's where your economy is. You know, urban and you must not think, and this is why sometimes one is very, doesn't understand when people don't understand the enormity of the challenge that we have. The people are in the centers, are in the urban centers, and we need to be focusing in those places as well. We must not, when we do that, we have to remember that, you know, this is where the population densities are. But that's all I can say for now. But well done, and I'm hoping that you are going to continue on this path. It's very encouraging, knowing where you come from. And I don't think it was the DA that did that. We are the ones that did it. We make mistakes, but we correct them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we are brave enough to correct them when we make them. So don't listen to Honorable Matau. It's going to mislead you and poison your mind. So, okay, guys. I'm suggesting that we go let me just give them a few, 10 minutes maybe to respond. Yes, to respond. Then we can go for lunch. And our lunch is going to be very short, guys. Just for 30 minutes so that we can then come back and take the big man in the house. who is telling us. No, but because let me tell you why I like him. It's because we present all the time. We come here and DJs come here, minister. They present the things. And this man comes here and he negates that with his statistics.
He knows I like him too.
Yeah, he negates it, and you listen, and you say, no, but everybody was saying everything is going well. Then he comes with his statistics, and they are saying, hey, you know, we are not doing what we are supposed to do. Anyway, that's it. Okay, over to you. No problem.
Just quickly, I think we appreciate the guidance. Most of the comments were guided and the issue implement them moving forward. Indeed, it makes a lot of sense to engage the staff directly. We have had the meeting with the chair of the committee last year, just as that will take further time. We will continue to engage the staff as well.
Just a final thing on our part. We are very, very worried that the board of the NYDA is not confirmed yet. That thing has gone through Parliament a long time ago, as you know. Can you, when you are making that input, undertake to tell the powers that be that it's more urgent than yesterday?
Thank you. The responsibility, or rather the power to confirm the board as per recommendations from both the MCOP and from Parliament lies with the President. We have indicated to the President, I think we all know that there was quite some very long time have indicated to the President upon
I think it's more pressing the NYD offices both in the Western Cape and in Cape, because those are very vast provinces. And the only office, or the only two offices in Cape, and one of them else, which is in Maritzburg, almost non-functional. So that's the area that spans both Cape and the Western Cape.
What is almost non-functional?
Well, I mean, it's a local office that, just like in all the other areas, it's not a full-service branch.
Okay.
So compared to the Devon one.
Okay.
But you need, you know, more offices. I mean, KZN is one of the most populous provinces in the country. You only have one fully functioning branch. So that's one area which was helped through the NYT to look at, together with the Western Cape. Just as a final point, I mean, with into the future, so we will be reporting, so there will be the NYD report, but there will also be an overall report of government work in terms of youth development. Because one of the, I think, biggest problem is to assume that the NYDA can be everything that relates to, I mean, if you think about issues around the external level, for instance, you know, you'll be stretching them far too much. You know, so we're ensuring that at the presidency we are establishing that capacity so that we're able to coordinate all of government's work in terms of youth development. As is now, the task team that that I'm chairing of deputy ministers has taken up that responsibility, and most of the deputy ministers are very excited in driving youth work in their respective departments. And I think from now onwards, we will ensure that we keep the committee up to speed in terms of the work that the whole of government, stakeholder enterprises, and all of them are doing in terms of youth. We see this as a major priority. And maybe just finally, the young man, Siabulela Tuza, who's a scientist, I'm sure you've seen that, was given one of the orders by the president last week, Friday, for his great achievement in science and technology. And I fully agree with you that that's one of the areas which the Science and Technology Department needs to be looking at if we are to be up to speed with the rest of the world in terms of its development.
On our oversight responsibilities, Parliament chairs, on this our topic, to say that if honourable members would agree with me, that also one day BM will also follow up with the office of the president in terms of the board. But I will humbly request that we authorize you through the speaker's office to make a follow up formal. Because it's our role, because we can't all the time have an official who's supposed to be doing other work in terms of DPME still continuing, whereas in terms of parliament processes are completed. That's all I wanted to say to you. Thank you.
I must say she's having fun with the
Yeah. DM. I do need, before we go to lunch, to note that we are extremely, extremely concerned about the top management turnaround in government. And maybe this is something that you need to be discussing with Minister Chekwatebe. It's scary, actually. In fact, it's now looking more like we're looking at it from the performance and monitoring perspective, but the DM as well of public service has the responsibility as well to take it with Minister Mutambi, because it's concerning us. You know, the thing is, what is currently happening and what we are hearing from many people, The public sector is no longer the employer of choice. Very, very talented people, very skilled people do no longer want to associate with the public sector. And because it looks like that's where they go to have their dreams broken. Exactly, I'm telling you. I don't have empirical evidence to that effect, but my estimation is that the turnaround of DGs and so forth, you know, that old school thing of government come and go but state remains, it's because they represent the institutional memory. It looks like we are losing that. You know, when ministers are changed, they change everybody, and you have to bring a new team, and maybe after 2 years there's a reshuffling, they change, then you have to bring new people. And that is a problem, and people then think they become unemployable, and therefore they are not going. I'm not sure if this is something that we are picking up in terms of the applications, if people are actually applying, but I know that there's been a delay in filling your organogram at DPME, precisely because of the low uptake of those positions. And I think we really, really have to do that. And as the committee, we are going to raise it during the debate. We are going to be raising this as a concern in our report. Thank you. Anyway, let's go for lunch for 30 minutes, guys, and come back. You are more than welcome to go.
Well, that's it. The chair wants to do it. is not what's going to say it. Including this door.
Is it going to attract the queen? I say it's drama queen.